Barefoot Blues Hour is made possible in part by the Belfast Framer and Gallery, featuring custom framing, prints, posters, and monthly exhibits of original art. Open weekdays 10 to 5 or by appointment at 96 Main Street in Belfast.
Information presented in the following program represents the opinions of the participants and does not constitute medical advice. Please consult your physician before undertaking any treatment or therapy.
Health-related programming on WERU is made possible in part by Inner Tapestry, Maine's holistic journal. Featuring alternative health and natural living articles, calendar listings, and a directory of resources. Available at health food stores and alternative health centers, 781-9885 or innertapestry.org. And by the nonprofit Whole Health Center on Mount Desert Island. Since 1981, providing a broad spectrum of integrated care, including individual and couples counseling, as well as nutritional and herbal health care, body work, and traditional Qigong therapies. 288-4128 or thewholehealthcenter.com.
The time is 10:01 and you are tuned to your community radio station, WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. Common Health with Jim Fisher is next.
Calling all listeners, we need you to join our dialogue on health in Maine. This is Jim Fisher of the Hancock County Planning Commission and host of Common Health. This summer we're hosting a two-part series on public health and fitness. Today we are considering the benefits and risks of being physically active for personal and public health. The data are clear. We walk less, we do less physical labor, we're putting on weight at a record pace. How can we turn the tide on Maine's infatuation? Our personal health relies upon our public health. Your job is to call in and join our dialogue to make Maine a healthier place to live. Call us anytime, even now, at 469-0500 or toll free at 866-625-9378. I'm joined this morning by two guests. We're going to be talking about physical activity and fitness, and we're going to be looking at that from two perspectives. Catherine Princell is the chronic disease nurse manager for Blue Hill Memorial Hospital, and she's going to help us understand a little bit about what we're supposed to do to stay healthy. Good morning, Catherine.
Good morning.
And I have Dan Stewart. He's the bicycle and pedestrian planner for the Department of Transportation. He's going to talk a little bit about what we can do as a community to make our towns healthier. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Jim.
Well, we've just gotten started on this subject, but it's never too early for you to call in. So remember, if you've got some personal experiences about fitness, fatness, physical activity, couch potativity, you can call anytime at 469-0500 or 866-625-9378. Let's start a little bit, get a little background. Dan, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you came to be involved in bicycle and pedestrian planning in Maine, and what that means for you in terms of physical activity.
Thanks, Jim. Again, I'm Dan Stewart. I'm with the Maine Department of Transportation. I am the bicycle and pedestrian coordinator statewide, and I went into planning originally to become involved in how communities grow, how we plan our communities, and how we move towards a healthier tomorrow. I'm involved in a variety of efforts to improve policies and get our sidewalks and shoulders and towns more livable and walkable. And that's a real strong interest as a planner.
Mm-hmm. It's a big challenge in rural parts of the state, too, isn't it?
It is.
Got a lot of narrow roads. And Catherine, tell us a little bit about your work and how that relates to the topic today.
I first started at Blue Hill Hospital developing their Get Strong, Get Healthy exercise program. I am an exercise physiologist as well as a nurse. So I've been involved in physical fitness for years in community settings, in worksite settings, in hospital settings. So it was very natural for me when they called and asked if I would help get an exercise program started to get going at a community level. And since that time, I've been involved in chronic disease management, and one of the components is getting people to be more physically active. So I spend most of my day talking to people about exercise.
Well, let's start with a definition. What is fitness? I mean, how do we know when we're there, or are we there?
That's a very, that's a very good question. Maintaining fitness is important. by staying physically active every day for at least 30 minutes. But that's the maintenance portion. What we're involved with in our culture today is people who are out of shape to the point where they need to exercise at least for an hour to an hour and a half a day to get back into shape. And what that means is keeping their weight under control, having their cardiovascular system efficient, having their muscle mass to a point where they're able to lift and carry and do what they need to do on a daily basis. So you have to quantify it based on a person's abilities. If they have not exercised regularly for years, it's going to take them a while to get back into shape. My goal is to try and keep people exercising all the time so we don't have to go backwards.
Yeah, so 90 minutes is a lot. What would somebody want to concentrate on in that case? Because I think of some people who can lift a tremendous amount of weight, but they don't look fit to me. They couldn't necessarily run a mile.
No. Well, the aerobic portion of exercise is critical at this point, particularly because of our abdominal obesity problem and our obesity period problem. Resistance training is very helpful for maintaining muscle mass and bone density, but what we see currently is people lacking the aerobic endurance that they need to burn the amount of calories that they need to keep the fat from growing around their organs and their abdominal area. So that's where the length and intensity of exercise has come to play more than just the little 30 minutes a day, which is wonderful. I'll take anything I can get. 30 minutes is fine. But for people who are significantly overweight or who have significant health issues such as diabetes, they need to spend a bit more time exercising at a higher level of intensity.
So maybe I'm a dummy, but when you say resistance training, we're talking about lifting weights, sit-ups, pretty things you can't keep breathing necessarily while you're doing it.
Resistance exercise is somewhat anaerobic, yes. Yeah. You're not doing the heavy oxygen thing, but resistance can be a lot of different things. It can be just using a small handheld weight, or again, it could be doing push-ups. What we've seen over the years is that adding resistance training, even a lower level, you don't have to be pumping 200 pounds. It's really, 5-10 pound weights is fine. You're maintaining the integrity of the muscles and also keeping your joints more flexible. So as we grow older, we tend not to lose as much muscle mass and bone density.
Yeah, I had on a list, I was thinking, well, there's endurance, there's strength, and endurance would be this aerobic
thing. That's the aerobic
portion.
You're
breathing, you're running, you're swimming, you're doing things, you're maybe lifting weights, but it's a lot of repetition. You can keep breathing. The resistance is heavier duty stresses, maybe, working on muscles more. And you introduced flexibility or something like that, because that's certainly an issue. I know my knees are beginning to go.
Flexibility exercises are very important as we grow older, too. Maintaining the integrity of the joint so you can reach and stretch and bend requires daily activities, just sitting and stretching and giving your muscles time to lengthen. And also, it's a good relaxation activity and stress management activity as well. So maintaining flexibility can be twofold in terms of how it keeps us peaceful, but also it keeps our muscles nice and long and strong.
You added a new one. That's sort of mental fitness, I guess, or being at peace, which is, I guess, one of the big benefits of regular exercise.
Absolutely.
So a peaceful, healthy body. What about skill? There are some exercises that are pretty simple to learn. They're good physical exercise. They're not terribly exciting to do and maybe even boring. And other things like, let's say tennis, where it's good physical exercise, but there's also a skill level you have to achieve. Is there some measurement you do where people work their way up a skill level, or do you start with simple things? And
starting with simple things, absolutely, and looking at people's likes and dislikes. Also, being involved in the educational process at a younger age with the skill level building for athletic activities. But I'm sort of biased against athletic activities because I think they tend to keep more people away from exercise as opposed to simple day-to-day activities that get more people involved in physical activity. So if a person's interested in that sort of thing, I think it's wonderful. But if they're intimidated by it, I don't believe they should be forced into thinking, I have to do this to exercise or it's not considered exercise. And that's a continual challenge for me to keep people to understand that all sorts of activities can be exercise.
No, you make a good. I always wonder what happens with a lacrosse player when they finish college. That's not, nowhere to go with lacrosse. That's a great sport. But there's some team sports that are hard to maintain through your life. Well, Dan, that kind of cues into some of the work you're doing with the department where you're trying to create some infrastructure for people to do basic things. What programs do you have right now in Maine that are sort of working in that direction?
Well, we have a variety of programs. Basically, we have a safety and promotional program where we work with the Bicycle Coalition of Maine, and they do bike safety education and work with the schools to try to get more kids involved and safer and riding their bikes. We have a Safe Routes to School program where we provide education and outreach and infrastructure improvements to make it easier for kids to just simply walk and bike to school. Excuse me. And as we mentioned earlier, it's important to do that, to have that as an active part of their days. We also create long-distance trails, urban trails in towns and in communities to give them other options to get out there and get some exercise along their riverfronts, along their waterfronts. We work with communities to improve their infrastructure through sidewalks and things like that. So when you leave your house and you want to go to the store, you don't necessarily have to take your car. You may want to take a walk with the family or the dogs, and you feel a lot more safer to do that. So it's through a variety of initiatives, including education, outreach, infrastructure improvements. It really takes – and also planning, working with communities to plan their communities better, to create more compact communities so that people want to live there and not necessarily move out into the countryside where they have to drive everywhere.
Walking the dog. I think probably that's some of the best exercise because the dog needs to be walked. It's something. And that's probably the dynamic I'm working towards here because I'm also a planner, and I look at communities that are not built for exercise. They're built for cars. And people don't have any reason to go walking unless they want to for exercise. It's not to get to work or to go shopping unless it's a compact community. But walking the dogs, clearly, if the dog needs to get out, I do see a lot of people doing that. Does that count as aerobic exercise?
Well, it depends on how fast the dog wants to walk and how long the dog wants to walk. And if you have one like mine that stops and sniffs everything, that kind of gets in the way of it being aerobic. However, again, I encourage people that I speak with daily that if that's one of the ways they can get their exercises to walk their dogs, I highly encourage them to do it. And it counts. And we document how many minutes a day we're exercising, doing all sorts of different things. And that's where it becomes very interesting and also enlightening to people to see whether they are physically active or not, and getting people to quantify the amount of physical activity they do, whether it's washing the windows, walking the dog, or jogging, is very helpful for people to understand and integrate more activity into their daily lives.
I'd like to remind listeners that this is a call-in show, and you may have questions about what you need to do to stay fit or, as we're learning, to get into shape and to stay in shape. And you can reach us at 469-0500 or toll-free 866-625-9378. You may also want to call if you have questions about programs to help your community to build infrastructure. Dan mentioned riverfront trails. There's shoulder paving on roads. There are bike trails. There's actually a program right now, isn't there, Grant? A grant program called Safe Routes to School, which you mentioned. And what would a town need to do to apply for those funds?
Well, excuse me. Right now, we have our applications online for funding for infrastructure projects within communities. You can go to the Maine DOT website and look up the application. And you work with your town leaders and your schools, and you try to develop a priority for what really needs to happen. You do a walkable audit. You try to connect your neighborhoods to your school and say, what is needed? Do we need crossing improvements? Do we need lights? Do we need crosswalks? Do we need a sidewalk? And then you work with your community to prioritize. And then you also work with your schools to develop Safe Routes to School programs where they're encouraging people to walk together, walking school buses and things like that. I would urge anybody to go onto our website, look at the application, and if you read the application, you'll find a lot of things that you need to do actually to make a good application. And this is a long-term commitment. This is not meant to be just this year. It's how we move forward with our communities. So every town will have a variety of needs. It's a matter of prioritizing and getting local support, getting people involved, and getting the application into us.
What is a walking school bus? They usually have wheels in our town.
A walking school bus basically is where a teacher or a advocate or a parent leads a group of school kids, and they start walking, and then more people join in. And by the time you get to the school, you basically have a group of kids walking instead of in a school bus. And we normally kick that off with a walk to school week in October and in May. And we're in the process of developing a statewide incentive program where kids will be given incentives like monthly drawings and things like that to encourage kids to walk to school every day throughout the year.
And that can be a challenge because I know more than a few schools in the region don't want children to walk to school. They think it's unsafe.
And that is a very important issue. Safety is important. And that's where getting parents involved and becoming more aware that it is actually safe, especially with groups of kids to walk or buddy system or things like that, that it is safe. We all walked as kids to school. I think a lot of it is actually more in our heads, the fear.
I agree.
than the reality. And really, if you can educate people that it is safe to walk to school, and if there are improvements, to work towards those improvements. To get kids walking and biking to school, because it's not only healthy, it gets them active, develops healthy lifestyles, but also socially. You develop friends when you walk together.
I agree, and I remember where I grew up, and I think this is probably the case if I had the listeners all hold up their hands now. If they walk to school, and then hold up your hands if your children do, in every room I've been, I've seen the hands all drop. And that's partly because I guess a number of us grew up in more compact areas where there were better facilities for walking and we had neighborhood schools. But in other cases, it's simply that school policy or convenience or something has come to bear and there's a lot less walking than
yes.
there used to be.
And Jim, you mentioned the policies. That is important. Some yeah. schools do have policies that limit, they won't even allow it. And we want to work with those schools and try to – it actually saves their resources if they can even get kids to walk to a central bus stop or things like that if they are too far away from their schools. We want to work together with the Department of Education, and we are working with them on kind of improving these policies with schools to get more schools to allow kids to walk to school and encourage that.
Well, if you're a school administrator, I encourage you to call us at WERU. You can call us at 469-0500 or 866-625-9378 because you're kind of on the hot seat if your school – and some of us – I've certainly seen children – standing, waiting for a bus for 10, 15 minutes, the bus comes and the school is next door.
Yeah.
They could have walked there in less time. And it's a waste of resources. And beyond that, the diesel fumes from the buses really do create a health problem for the children in the school and the children getting on the buses. And we have to look at all elements of health, and our dependence on cars is certainly contributing to air problems.
Oh, I agree. Well, what I've been trying to do, I also work with families in terms of the chronic disease issues that I deal with. Unfortunately, our young people are...
participating stations in accordance with local and state's plans. This is a test message. Do not take action based on this test message.
And I think we're back on. We didn't need a test. We had the real thing yesterday, but we had a test. And I think we have a caller on the line. Please come in. You're on.
Yes, hello. My name is Martin, and I'm a school bus driver. And I support your program. I work for the city of Ellsworth, and they send us to training every year, which I just attended here recently. And this year's big push was our pre-trip safety inspection. They did discuss the safety issues of the kids, and the main state trooper that presented the slideshow on that said that in an average year nationwide, six children were killed involving school bus transportation. Approximately four of them are run over by the bus driver, and the other two are hit by passing cars. The interesting part of the next figure was that in all other forms of transportation, there was an average of 800 per year.
Oh, I think that's very much the case in Maine. We have a lot of parents driving their kids. It's pretty chaotic when you get to the school with a lot of parents all driving their kids, and the buses certainly provide a very safe environment. Tell me, though, is there much move in Ellsworth now towards the idea of having a bus stop where kids would gather at a safe location for the bus to pull off and pick them up?
I've worked for Laidlaw, Sear, and Ellsworth now, and everyone has so far has been essentially the same. We don't go down private roads, so it's virtually door-to-door service. There are some roads, you know, there are private roads where you may get, you know, six or eight kids, but generally it's one and two. You know, that's just the nature of the game up here, you know. So, and then, you know, because we're so rural, you know, some of the kids are on the bus a pretty good long time. You know,
yeah, I agree, and that that's certainly an issue why a lot of parents are driving their kids to school, because the bus has to stop so many times at so many houses, and each stop takes so long that in our case, I don't think we're any exception, that the bus ride to the Blue Hill School is about an hour, and the drive is about 10 minutes. And
I live in Blue Hill, and I used to I was B bus for a couple of years. And, you know, I went, you know, clear to North Blue Hill, and then down through Blue Hill, all the way out to the Surrey Town Line by the gravel pits, all the way back down up the Turkey Farm Road, and then down to the school. And it was a 55-minute run, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a long time.
And I think, Dan, if you want to add, I appreciate your call. Dan, if you want to talk a little bit about the idea of compact communities, because what we have in Maine, obviously, is that we're growing in a sort of into rural development in a big way, or some people call it sprawl, and that creates a lot of challenges for bus routes.
Yes. You know, the reality is that we are growing out into the countryside. There are strong forces that are making that happen. And there's a lot of people who are trying to counter that with compact development policies and encouragement incentives. There's a lot of reasons to live socially within a community, the environment, the rural space preservation, and things like that. However, people are going to continue to live in the countryside, and that's where, from the Department of Transportation standpoint, we want to provide safe access on our transportation system, and that would mean when you leave your house, yes, you may not be able to walk all the way to your school because it's 15 miles away, but you can take your kids for a walk or bike and get to where you're going along that stretch of road, and then to some more rural areas and things like that. But it is important, you know, as we move sustainably into the future, that we do try to improve our policies where I think we are more living towards centralized areas. There's a lot of benefits to that. There's a lot of resources, including, you know, gas for school buses, for infrastructure, for congestion, and things like that, to that we should all live in more compact areas. And that's really a wide-ranging effort where there's a lot of people working to do that. And we really have to work on both, because a lot of people do want to live out in the rural areas, and we need to provide exercise options and access to the transportation system for them also.
So here's the dynamic I'm trying to set up, and we need listeners to join in this dialogue. Is we've got Dan here talking about what can we do to make the communities work for physical activity, but we also have the market demands, which appear to be driving people, or people are choosing to live in rural, sprawling areas where they're not going to get bus service. They're very likely not going to get paved shoulders for some time. And on the other hand, Catherine's there working on, I don't want to call it a recreational, but a health maintenance level for people to take responsibility for their lives under conditions that are very difficult. And what are some of the challenges that you're confronting with your clients?
Probably the biggest challenge that I have is winter in Maine. generally speaking, in the summer, people are very active, even just mowing their lawns. But in the wintertime, I have to really come up with creative solutions to keep people moving. And so I guess we have a caller.
We have two callers, I think. So we're going to take the first caller now. You're on.
Hi, this is Jenny. I'm from Sedgwick.
And you have
children.
Hold on
one second. I'll find it later. I do, and they might be yelling on the other side of my door. Right now. Sorry about this.
Well, go for it.
This is reality of living in Maine, living anywhere. I'm a school teacher, or I used to be a school teacher before I had kids, and I know one thing that's happening is they're losing gym a lot and even recess, but I know at our local school and at some others, they're doing a thing called Brain Gym, and it's movement basically to integrate sensory awareness so that kids have an easier time focusing on their work. And one thing that's different is instead of once a week or even once a day, you do it throughout the day, which is much more, I think, a better way to teach exercise to people, that it's not just once at a time thing, but incorporating it really into your life. Also, chores. I think kids need chores, and even grown-ups need chores.
Sounds like you have some.
Yeah, oh my goodness, unbelievably mad little boy right now. And so I won't talk much longer, but I think there's a lot of ways that you can integrate exercise back into the day. We're surrounded by woods, and I don't know how many families I know that never go into them. And when I taught, I couldn't believe in Sedgwick how many kids had never even been to MDI. Hmm. And there's how much, I mean, that's some of the best exercise in the world. And so it's educating parents, and I don't know if it's a time issue because so many people have to work so much. And with the driving times that add, so you're not having a lot of time at home. But just incorporating it with kids so it's throughout the day or each day. And one last thing is that even in the film Super Size Me, at a school they profiled, the kids went and exercised every single day, and they charted their progress. So it was not competitive. It was only competitive within themselves. And they charted the students' progress, and one thing that they noticed is all of their schoolwork improved because they were getting oxygen to their brains. And they made it a lifestyle issue rather than an exercise.
Thank you for your call. We're going to let another caller on and let you get back to your children or your son. Caller number two, come in. You're on.
Hi, this is Iris, HealthLink, Maine Coast Memorial. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Very good. I've been sitting here making some comments written down. Also, I would just want to relate some success stories. We have a physician that advocates that the best prescription a doctor should write is one for physical activity. Wish they did more of that. First of all, Catherine had mentioned, it's so great to have Catherine on. Catherine mentioned her Get Strong, Get Healthy classes. I just came back from a Get Strong, Get Healthy class this morning. And I just want to comment on some of the wonderful effects of the class that she shared for free to lots of residents in Hancock County. And then we took those lessons and expanded it. It just proves that you're never too old to start some sort of physical activity, and you will see benefits. For example, we have the Get Strong, Get Healthy class that meets in Gouldsboro twice a week. The average age is around 70 because we have some 90-year-olds in the class. The class has been meeting for over 3 years, but even within the first year, other than just bone building, you could observe the increased flexibility. But even more than that, they could turn the clock back and regain some of their balance. Losing your balance comes as a kind of a surprise to some of us elderly people when you finally reach an age when you can't stand on one foot comfortably. Balance is a huge issue. We have some Tai Chi classes that we offer, and you can see the benefit and definitely the movement increased and also the balance. Now, on to Dan's subject in regards to walking. It's probably the easiest exercise we can all do, not sauntering, but trying to get up to at least 3.5 miles per hour. But it isn't easy to do. There are so many outdoor areas that are just not fit to walk in, especially in the winter. Have you ever visited a large shopping mall and observed all of the seniors that are walking, many of them, before the stores open? No, I'm not advocating shopping malls, but it just shows that we have a real lack for exercising, walking, and so forth in the wintertime. There definitely is need for more sidewalks. In Ellsworth, you can walk on a sidewalk, and then it abruptly ends, and you're in the street. In rural areas, we walk on the side of the road and time our walks before and after gravel trucks are on the road. Now, I'm I live in Lemoyne, by the way. I guess you could recognize that. I spent time in North Dakota because that's where I'm originally from, and observed that you can walk anywhere in Bismarck, North Dakota, on a sidewalk. But remember, Bismarck was built, well over 100 years after the towns here have been built. So they don't have that constraint of space as we do. It's hard to widen roads. For example, looking at how the landscape has changed in the drive in Sullivan, where the road is being widened, they've lost the trees. Now the houses are next to the road. It's a large problem, and thank goodness we have people like Dan that's going to solve those problems.
Correct. Go for it, Dan.
Because you've all heard the problems. Yeah. Now what do we do about it? And just a side note is I have a relative who is quite overweight, and she's in her early 70s. She needs some surgery. The doctor told her that he would not be able to do surgery until she lost some weight and she could walk 2 miles. Her answer was, "Doctor, I've never walked 2 miles." And I think that's so sad. So thanks to Catherine for spreading a good physical activity, and Dan, a place for us to do it. Okay?
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
And as always, we encourage other listeners to call in. You can reach Common Health. We're on for another 25 minutes or so. You can call us at 469-0500 or toll-free at 866-625-9378. Well, a lot of words came up again that, you know, for me are new ones. Brain gym, is that new to you?
No, actually, it's not. It's interesting. One of the things we're trying to promote is more activity in the schools. And since the physical education programs have been significantly cut, I'm an old gym teacher that stopped being a gym teacher because we don't need them anymore because we don't do that anymore in the schools. Consequently, we've had to come up with ways to integrate movement into the daily school life. And so there have been wonderful, innovative programs come along that actually have children moving every hour for a few minutes and integrating math and reading skills in movement activities, and I love it. I think it's wonderful. I wish we could do more of it. And also getting to, just as the caller mentioned, getting people to understand activities of daily living are critical, and we are trying to promote more understanding of how easy it is to stay active every day. It doesn't have to be complicated.
Well, it certainly sounds like we're bringing the two pieces together here, the personal and the public, when we start talking about integrating physical activity in areas where I hadn't thought. Math. I can recall in the Waldorf schools, and there are three in Maine, children are taught what's called eurythmy. It's sort of a rhythmic dance. And I think there's some evidence that that helps with math, that they're thinking, they're dividing time, they're thinking of complex combinations of rhythms, and that helps them with math. I imagine there are other examples of that. But what do you know in brain gym? What
well, there's
examples?
There's musical examples. There's puzzles that they do, and they chant, and they're moving pieces of themselves and adding parts and connecting with each other, and it's just involving your thought process while you're moving and putting the two together. And it's been proven that music and dance and rhythm are very important in brain function and enhancing the ability to learn. And so combining the activities, and not technically calling it exercise because some people don't like to hear that word, you are creating the brain function that needs to happen through movement, but they really don't know that's what they're doing. They're just having a good time playing a game.
And it speaks to something that Iris mentioned when she called, and it's yet another criteria. I mean, we got to flexibility, then she said balance, and brought in Tai Chi, and that must be incredibly important if you're going to avoid hip fractures and
Well, one of the questions you brought up about what is fitness, there's so much to it. But as we grow older, balance is critical. And part of the reason that we lose our ability to balance is simply because we don't practice moving through space enough. And so our ability to judge distances, it becomes difficult. And also, as we get heavier and less flexible and weaker, our ability to hold ourselves up becomes very difficult. And I know that sounds simple, and oh no, that's not going to happen to me, but unfortunately it really does, and it happens before you know it. And so the kind of exercises that we do in the Get Strong, Get Healthy program, as well as Tai Chi, is we include lots of movements that require center of gravity, balance, understanding how your body moves through space, and being in control of your own body. And just as Ira said, we've seen remarkable results with some of our older participants.
Wow, and so is Tai Chi available, that kind of class for people pretty commonly in Maine, or is it an unusual circumstance?
It's available in certain areas, but not as much as it could be and should be, no. Mm-hmm. The HealthLink people are fantastic in terms of the way they've brought things to the communities, but again, it's limited to different communities, and the distance, again, is a problem, and so on and so forth. So the small rural areas don't have it as easily accessible as some of the larger places.
Goldsboro.
Thanks to HealthLink. No,
yeah,
they're wonderful.
Thanks to HealthLink. And would yoga fit in this category, too, where you're working on flexibility and balance?
Absolutely. In fact, in the Get Strong, Get Healthy program, I incorporated yoga because I was trying to make a one-stop shopping exercise program because I realized people had little access. And so the yoga movements absolutely are very important for balance and flexibility.
Hmm. Do they help with weight loss? Or is it just more of an incentive at that point? You realize it's an issue and you really need to do the aerobic and the... Yeah.
Any kind of movement is functional and helpful in terms of maintaining weight. Where we are getting into trouble as a culture is we've become so overweight that the level of activity, unfortunately, isn't enough to take the weight off. So again, doing the regular activity, if we start young, maintaining the weight loss and maintaining activity doesn't have to be quite as complicated as it has become because we've become such an overweight society. And I hate to say that, but we have to work a little harder to get the weight to go.
Well, you certainly have covered a number of my questions. I always, when I called this the swimsuit edition of Common Health, I was a little nervous that people would turn off, say, look, I'm in shape, it's round, but it's a shape. And leave my weight out of this. I just want to be fit. And I guess it is possible to be fit without being particularly thin. You can still get to some level of fitness even if you've got a larger bone structure.
Oh, absolutely. And the only problem we're looking at now, again, is with the abdominal obesity. A person can be of normal weight and still have the very large belly that's contributing to their disease process. And where we work in that situation is the type of exercise to burn that particular abdominal weight issue, as well as eating. Eating is also a part of this process, too, and not eating too much is part of the program.
Right, and we're going to talk about food in August, but today we're talking about exercise. And there are some objective measures out there, and it's one of the things that we seem to do pretty well with kids in some schools, and I'm aware in some schools in Eastern Maine, at least, they've been using a device called or a method called the fitness gram. I don't know if you've heard of that, but they're trying to take measures of a number of things to see if the kids, you know, how quickly can you run this, or how many leg presses can you do, or pull-ups can you do. I don't know the specific things, but it sounds like it's getting towards an idea that we'll be able to say, well, yeah, you're on the right track. You're at maintenance level now. Do we have that for adults, too? Do we talk body mass index, or do we have some
absolutely.
Way of knowing?
I talk body mass index every day.
We better define it. But first, we have a call. Please, come in.
Yes, I have a comment, which is a solution, I believe, in my own mind. Eat less and do more.
I like it.
And I think that's the end of what I'm going to say.
Well, thank you for your call. You know, that there is this discussion when we talk about the global warming, there's the carbon balance, mm-hmm. how much carbon is in the ground and how much is up in the air. And for people, it's the calorie balance. It's kind of how much do you consume and how much do you burn each day. And if you're consuming more than you're burning, you're going to be like most Americans, adding about a pound or two a year. Which, if you live to a good age, means you're going to be pretty heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. And the body mass index issue is one of the ways we're measuring. And
what is the body mass index?
Body mass is a relationship between height and weight, mm-hmm. and there's a very interesting formula that I won't share over the air because it's complicated, but you can look up on the internet and put your weight and height in, and you can find your body mass index in a minute. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is keep people's body mass index within a certain level, below 25 for men and below 30 for women. And the goal then is to maintain your weight at that level. And if it goes over that, then it becomes a risk related to health. And being overweight is now an independent risk factor as opposed to being combined with others.
Dan, you were going to say something?
Well, I just want to touch upon a little bit about what Iris said and give a plug for the HealthyMaineWalks.org website because Iris mentioned that she goes to a mall and walks around. And on that website, you will find statewide both outdoor and indoor walks. And I encourage people to work with the communities, to work with their schools because a lot of schools are listed there. You can get in there and even through the winter and get some exercise in the indoor places that exist throughout the state. There are many listed indoor and outdoor. And I think that's a very, very good point and resource for people to get involved and to list more of them, because part of it is to provide opportunities that, you know, exercising is important and wonderful, but the more variety that we provide through again, walkable communities and getting out there and walking, but also indoor activities, the malls and things like that are great resources.
Yeah, you know, I'm always telling people, go to the web for this information or that, and there's a lot. But I'd also tell you for this program, go there, but then turn it off. Get what you need, turn it off. There was a bit of news today that visitation to our national parks is down about 25%, I think, in the last 20 years. And they don't have a clear explanation, but a very strong correlation is the rise of video gaming and computer internet access, and it's only going to get more seductive in the future with high-definition TV, that it will be hard for parents to pry their kids loose, or for kids to pry their parents loose, maybe, to go to a national park, to go out and walk in the woods and stay in touch with nature. So Healthy Maine Walks. Go to healthymainewalks.org. Find the walks of your choice and turn off the computer.
Jim, I would just add that it's really important we all have a variety of activities and that we work towards getting ourselves involved in those activities and participating in your local planning organizations and getting involved in your project development. And when there's town meetings, go get involved and say, hey, we want to make sure our communities are healthy and that our schools are open and have inclusive policies and things like that. And public involvement, getting involved, and making your communities healthier is very important.
Yeah, and how do we do that though? We've got exercise programs, and some communities will say, well, we don't have the resources even to open the gym on weekends, but we will encourage you to go visit a health educator and get your program together. What do you do with that? Because you're saying winter is your biggest problem, and particularly for older people, we need to have some kind of indoor facilities.
Yeah, that's the hardest part of what I have to do with people in the wintertime is trying to find a place for them to exercise safely and comfortably. And again, I deal with a lot of senior citizens, and they're with good reason. They're afraid to go outside in the winter because it's icy or it's cold, and walking on the roads in the wintertime is quite frightening for several people. And, you know, what I encourage them to do is to talk with their towns and their schools to see if they can get the schools open for them to be walking in. We do have Blue Hill Hospital opens in the wintertime in the basement for people to walk, and I try and encourage people. But again, if they have to drive somewhere, particularly now that gas prices are so expensive, it's very difficult to encourage people to get out of their own environments to go walking. So I'm trying to be creative with, I ask them what buildings are available in your town, how far is it to your mailbox and back, just to get people out and about and recognize that they can create their own space to walk in if they have to.
And I would just add to that, that's very important to maintain sidewalks clear of snow and ice, whether it be your own, in front of your house, or in the downtown, to work with the town to make sure that people can get out all through the winter.
Good point. So particularly towns that are big enough that they have a number of sidewalks, a good investment would be a sidewalk plow,
that's correct.
To keep them clear. I know in some states, the property owners are required to clear the sidewalks in front of their homes. I don't see that in Maine much.
Portland is the one city that I know of that does require each owner to clear their own sidewalks.
We had to in Colorado.
Most places I've been, Maine, kind of laissez-faire, I guess. What about sort of the consequences of marketing for exercise? And I know a lot of what's marketed is got more to do with food, and that'll be next month. But is there some way we can use marketing or to encourage people to exercise more? Is that...
Well, I would think in making it attractive but not trendy, so to speak, and looking at educating people about healthy lifestyles and remaining active and all the different ways that you can remain active. One of my day-to-day work life, the greatest challenges I come across is helping people understand what activity is. And just like Iris said about her relative that had never walked 2 miles in her life, we have a lot of ground to cover in many ways to educate everyone about what exercise is and what compromises exercise and how much of our activities a day count as exercise. So even at that level, marketing would be wonderful as far as I'm concerned.
There's an awful lot and I don't watch much television, so I'm probably out of date, but an awful lot of what you see is a promotion of a certain body type, the Charles Atlas or I'll date myself if I name any woman, but but Raquel
Jane
Welch,
Fonda. I don't know,
Jane Fonda. Well, she exercises, but does that encourage people or does that actually discourage people when they see that sort of ideal type?
I think it discourages people. Also, people feel, well, I don't want to look like that. I'm not interested in being, a weight trainer. I don't care about that. And when I talk to people about resistance exercise, honestly, often their thought is of, oh, I don't want to look like Charles Atlas. I don't want to do resistance exercise. Particularly women, they really feel like, oh, if I pump iron, I'm gonna get all bulky. And so, no, the marketing regular resistance activity just keeps you healthy and strong is wonderful, but unfortunately that's not necessarily the mainstream marketing techniques that you see.
Jim, I think you were touching upon it a little bit earlier with it's all the choices that we all make and how we live our lives. Where you live is important, as I mentioned earlier, but also what you do. If you're in front of the television all the time or you're in front of your computer, you're not out there making an active lifestyle a part of your everyday life. I'm a strong believer that it's what you eat, but also what you do throughout your day and every day. And I think that's really what it comes down to, the type of choices that we all make and that we have available to us.
Well, that's interesting. We actually, you know, if I were to say there are three factors we typically look at, one is personal lifestyle choices, what we choose. Then there are all these environmental conditions that constrain our choices. That winter in rural Maine makes it difficult to go swimming outside. It just is a constraint. Some of us try it, but we don't stay in long. And then there's a third factor, which is also very difficult to manage, and that's sort of genetic or inherited traits. And I don't know if you deal with that too, with multiple chronic disease, but some people have a predisposition to heart disease.
They do. However, our environment has contributed much more to that than the genetics has. And if you have the genetic predisposition, it's even more important for you to be making good lifestyle choices. And, you know, I know you're going to talk about food in August, so I'm not going to get there, but food is only a piece of it. Actually, if you remain physically active every day, you're doing the best thing for yourself, whether you smoke, drink, or overweight, eat wrong, or whatever. It's the one thing in your life you can do that overcomes a great deal of damage that your environment is creating for you.
I want to give listeners one more reminder that we'd like you to call in. You can reach us at locally 469-0500, or you can call toll-free at 866-625-9378. So we want to build exercise into our lives. I'd say one way anybody could get exercise is visit the local transfer station and start picking up all the exercise equipment that's just piled up there with the old bicycles. I think those are the two things you will always find.
Yeah, look in Uncle Henry's. You'll see lots of things for sale in the exercise fitness equipment realm.
Yeah, treadmills, stationary bicycles, but even the ones that move. And what does that mean? I mean, there's been some marketing to get people to encourage people to buy the equipment, but does that just not work for most people, buying equipment and staying home and doing it on your own?
It takes a great deal of discipline to want to exercise by yourself regularly. And some people are very good at it. And some of the patients that I work with, I encourage to get a piece of equipment. And they will actually use it. And they'll report to me they're doing it, particularly in the wintertime here. Okay, mm-hmm. In the summer, okay, you go outside and do what you want to do. However, a lot of people really need a place to go to exercise where they're held accountable by going and seeing their friends and being involved in a process with a group. And so that sort of personality type is not going to use a treadmill at home because they want to be with a group of people exercising and socializing as well.
And I guess the equipment that you would get in a facility would be better quality. Some of the cheap exercise equipment may not be too easy to use. But you're talking mostly about the social environment.
It's the social helpful. Environment, yeah.
Yeah, and that. Dan, what about bicycling and being outdoors? You talked about healthy Maine walks and infrastructure. Are there social organizations people could join if they wanted to do more biking or have that kind of encouragement?
Well, there's bicycle clubs throughout the state, bicycle and pedestrian clubs throughout the state. Also, on the healthymainwalks.org website is a variety of organizations that people can get involved with. But I would contact the Bicycle Coalition of Maine. They have a list of all the bike clubs statewide.
Is that bikemaine.org?
Yes.
Okay, so bikemaine.org, or you could probably find them in the Augusta phone book. They have links to all the other local or many of the local
yes.
bike clubs.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to give me a call or contact me at DOT, I could also get you involved with any of the local groups if there's one in your area.
Well, you said it. What's your phone number and your email address?
Dan.Stewart, STEWART, at maine.gov, and then 624-3252.
Good. We had a caller who wanted, I think, to encourage us to make this link again between exercise and mental health. And I think we've done that, but is there anything we can say? I think of Tai Chi and yoga really being closely connected, but even the aerobic stuff must be really good. Huh?
Well, actually, one of the things that occurs when you exercise is you have a wonderful release of endorphins in your brain that relax everything and make you feel better about yourself, even though you're tired and sweating and so on and so forth. It almost seems contradictory, but actually...
feels good when it's over.
It feels good when it's over. But in terms of any kind of stress management programs, and I've done a lot of that in my life as well. One of the things we always include is regular physical activity. And one of the things I used to do when I worked in more metropolitan areas with folks is had them get involved in worksite exercise programs so that after work they could burn their jets out and get rid of the day and go home and be peaceful and happy and comfortable. And they would come back and say, you know, it's better when I go home at night after exercising, I'm happier and ready to have my evening with my family as opposed to just running home from work and screaming at everybody when I get in the door because I had such a tough day. So there's a distinct connection between the physical side of exercise and how it affects your mental status. I believe in that very strongly.
Good. We're getting close to the end here. I wanted to make sure we all had a chance here to talk about resources so that people who are listening now, if they want to learn more about exercise, want to advocate for safe routes to school in their communities, who do they go to? And Dan's just given us great contact information. Remember bikemaine.org if you want to know more about bicycle organizations. He mentioned the HealthyMaineWalks.org. There's another website called MainePhysicalActivity.org. Pretty much hits the nail on the head.
Our Maine DOT website provides a lot of resources through Explore Maine and what you can do throughout the state also.
And there are Healthy Maine partners all over the state. And for Hancock County, three of our groups mm-hmm. have pooled together and have a website called HealthyHancock.org. But I know there are other similar Healthy Maine partners, and they're creating walkable community maps and other kinds of resources. So you can look for the Healthy Maine partnerships for information. And Catherine, where else could people go?
Well, we're working right now. We just got another grant at the hospital to work on chronic disease management. And one of the things that we're working on is a website that's going to have resources, community resources for patients and families to access information to help them stay healthy, and one of the things they'll be able to access is exercise. But until the website's up and running, we have our community health program still through the hospital that you can call Helen Burnett and ask about the availability of the exercise programs all over. We still have them in Castine, in Brooklyn, in Brooksville, and in Blue Hill, and she'll be more than happy to give you information about how to access those classes and the contact people that you need to speak with to get into the classes.
Great. And there'll be programs coming up. There always are. There's Move and Improve is a good one. There was a recent one, I know, in some parts of Maine where towns all work together as teams to lose weight. A quick comment from a caller, and we'll let them on. Then we're going to have to wrap up. You're on. You're not on. We're trying again. Caller, are you there? The caller has hung up. Well, thank you for calling. That's the way it goes. Well, I think we're coming to the end of the show, and maybe we'll just wrap up on that. The caller is calling back, but it's too late. We'll take the call off the air and try to give you information you need. I want to say we've come to the end of our program for this month. Be sure and visit our website, commonhealth.org, where you'll find helpful background on a variety of public health topics, including audio archives, and a place for you to contribute questions for our future shows. Common Health theme music is Picaba, performed by Eric Horshack. Thanks to our guests, Dan Stewart and Catherine Princell. Thanks to Amy Brown for engineering and our underwriters and members for supporting all of our public affairs and news programs. Common Health airs on the third Wednesday of the month from 10 to 11 with support from Hancock County Planning Commission, the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Hancock County Coalition for Community Health. Join us next month for a dialogue about food. How we get it, what's in it, what we can do to make it healthier. It's all part of our swimsuit edition of Common Health, looking at fitness and health in Maine. Thanks again for listening and for your suggestions for future programs. Email us at commonhealth@weru.org and stay tuned for On the Wing with your host, Brother Al. This is Jim Fisher wishing you good health.